3, 2, 1.
The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. First of all, I want to welcome Acting State Treasurer Bernadette Bennett, who's sitting in for the treasurer, who's taking it very well. She's enjoying that. I just want to begin this morning with a brief COVID-19 update. For the past several months, we've deployed a team of 11,400 people. We stood up 3,000 points of distribution and launched a number of successful incentives and promotions and a massive all-hands on deck effort to make sure that every single Marylander who wants a COVID-19 vaccine can get access to one as quickly as possible. As a result of all those efforts, Maryland is one of the most vaccinated states in the country. 93% of all Marylanders over the age of 65 and 77% of all adults 18 and over are now vaccinated. We're one of the most vaccinated states in the country, and it has been paying off. As the number of vaccinated Marylanders continues to grow, Maryland now has the fourth lowest case rate in America and the sixth lowest positivity rate in the nation. If you have been vaccinated, you're safe, and we thank you for doing your part. But those who are unvaccinated do remain at risk, especially with this highly transmissible variant, the Delta variant, and others. But the Delta variant is said to be 225% more transmissible and 1,000 times stronger than the original virus. Nearly every single Marylander who has been hospitalized or has died from COVID-19 since June 1st was unvaccinated. Only 0.07% of our entire vaccinated population has gotten an infection with the virus. That means that after more than 7 months and more than 7 million vaccines in Maryland, that vaccines have been 99.93% effective in our state. Getting vaccinated is truly the only way to protect yourself, your family, and your community. And it's the only way that we will be able to continue on our economic and health recovery. If you're still unsure about getting the vaccine, or if you have questions, please talk to your doctor or talk to friends or loved ones who have already gotten their shot. The potential short-term side effects of getting the vaccine, which could last for a day or so, are nothing compared to the long-term effects of getting sick and infected with COVID-19. These vaccines are safe, they're clearly effective, they're readily available everywhere, all across our state, and there's simply no excuse for not getting vaccinated. From the beginning of the crisis, I've reminded Marylanders that we're all in this together. Getting through this together has required a massive effort, which involved thousands of public servants, who I'm so proud of, who've been working tirelessly, day in and day out, to help keep Marylanders safe. From standing up and staffing, testing sites, and then vaccination clinics, and building hospital surge capacity, coordinating with local leaders on state guidance, procuring and distributing PPE, and handing out meals to school children. These state employees have delivered the highest level of customer service under the most difficult of circumstances. And today, we're honored to be joined by just a few of the standouts among these thousands of incredible men and women who've been a part of this mission. And on behalf of all of the people of the state of Maryland, I want to sincerely thank each and every one of them for their dedicated service to the people of Maryland. And we're going to, I think, ask all of them to come back up here behind us and take a group picture. We've got some citations that everybody's received to thank them, but I know it's a crowd, but if you guys could come up behind us, we'd love to take a picture with you.
Yes.
are still coming.
Wanted to let you know that we will be having having our bond sale 2 weeks from now, and we'll be distributing that resolution today. We met with the rating agency yesterday all day long, and have to say that had a lot of good questions and had a lot of interaction. The council was able to join us for one call, and I felt like it went really well. So we're looking forward to that. And our sale 2 weeks from now is going to be including about $500 million in new money and some taxable. But in addition to that, we're going to be doing two refunding issues, which we are right now anticipating should save us about $40 million in debt service savings. So we're really looking forward to a wonderful sale next week. So just wanted to kind of say that and kind of give you a little update.
Well, thank you, and please thank all of your team. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
You always like to save money. Make money.
Absolutely. Well, Governor, thank you, and I'm delighted to be here with you, and you're looking very well, and I also am very pleased to be here with the Chief Deputy Treasurer, Bernadette Bennett, sitting in for Treasurer Cobb. Bernadette, welcome.
Thank you.
I didn't know we could substitute.
I didn't know that either.
I might have done that one.
I don't think I've ever seen that in 6.5 years, but apparently, I don't know if you can, but there's
more than you. Yeah, the treasurer can.
You're going to have to show up.
Yes, the treasurer can. And that's the treasurer. That's what happens. And this is what happens to you when you're appointed.
That's okay. I'm delighted to be here with both of you. And Governor Hogan, 8 years ago, after being elected, you visited my office. And you sat down and discussed kind of our roles in state government. And it seems like just a small thing to people perhaps listening, but it was actually a huge gesture, a first for me in my then 8 years as comptroller. It allowed me to work aggressively with my indispensable deputy comptroller, Sharon Bernardi, to make the comptroller's office in Maryland the finest tax administration agency in the country and a juggernaut for customer service for the taxpayers of the great state of Maryland. And frankly, just speaking from the heart, I think it laid the path for the two of us to work together, Republican and Democrat, for the benefit of all of Maryland, even though we disagree from time to time. And I will say, obviously, we disagree on more than a few issues. But the two of us are now heading in a different future directions with different agendas. And our country, frankly, is vastly different than it was 8 years ago, or even just 1 year ago. I just wanted to thank you for being the national adult of the Republican Party, pushing for vaccinations to help our country beat this pandemic, establishing mindful and science-based steps to reopen our economy. Despite the partisan politics that swirl in D.C., just a few miles down the road, your administration, in particular Budget Secretary David Gingrich, has been very helpful with the work group that we established on pandemic spending. This legislative mandate will help uncover, we believe, lessons learned and best practice recommendations for future administrations. Tomorrow's work group will focus on the events and activities of the Maryland Department of Labor, which continues to have waves of ups and downs with applications and processing. I hope we'll hear that Labor is making progress on helping the unemployed and underemployed Marylanders find resolutions to their unemployment insurance issues. And I also hope that we're going to have a handle, get a handle on stopping fraud. I'm particularly glad to hear you're hosting a cybersecurity summit tomorrow, Governor. I hope they have solid recommendations to help stop the bleeding of billions of dollars in federal and state dollars in unemployment insurance schemes alone. And this is not something that's unique to Maryland. Every state is suffering from this. I just read in the Daily Record about a woman who mistakenly was granted access to the unemployment system by simply clicking on an email sent to her in Canada. According to the article, many of these claims are apparently fraudulent. Nearly 65% of the claims made between January 1st, 2021 and February 11th being flagged as such at the same time. This is the article I'm quoting from. Many legitimate claimants have struggled during this time to receive unemployment payments, including those who were enormously, erroneously denied benefits or those whose accounts were incorrectly flagged as fraudulent. Our experts, and this is a rather stunning number, our experts in the comptroller's office estimate it is likely more than $2 billion have been paid in unemployment fraud in Maryland alone. Just to give you some perspective, California is estimating $30 billion. Does that mean the unemployment check should not be sent? Of course, no, they needed to be sent to people who were genuinely suffering. But I want to thank my staff at the comptroller's office for, despite we have all sorts of fraud detection, so we're able to keep a handle on this stuff. But we were also able to help Department of Labor's list of people stuck in review with the department and sending more. We sent more than $40 million in emergency grants to more than 40,000 Marylanders who were in limbo on this. In addition, our work group heard from the Department of Housing during the second meeting of the work group that only a slight percentage of the rental assistance funding from the federal government has been distributed. I'm hoping by our next board meeting on August 11th that Housing Secretary Ken Holt can provide a positive update that the bulk of these funds are helping Marylanders avoid evictions, especially since the expiration of the moratorium is just a couple of weeks away. And then finally, on another topic, and I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but once again, I'm incredibly disappointed to see that of the 15 emergency contracts on today's agenda, 11 were reported late. I know the explanation that I will hear from agency leaders will be that they were busy saving lives during the pandemic. But these late emergency contracts must stop. The Board of Public Works is not a rubber stamp, and I, for one, will not stand by quietly while laws are violated. So, Governor, I'm asking the board staff, Secretary John Gottschall in particular, to have his staff prepare an item for this board's consideration that would modify our emergency procurement regulations. More specifically, I'd ask the board staff to prepare language that would automatically terminate an emergency contract should the procuring agency fail to bring the item to the Board of Public Works within 45 days, as our statutes insist. Enough is enough. Even today, we're being asked to consider one emergency contract for an extension of 3 years. And we just need to restore the authority of the board and ensure that our agencies are following the rules and laws that govern our procurement system and safeguard taxpayers' money. And I'm sure all of us agree that we must refrain from a continued reliance on emergency contracts. I would like to see an end to the lateness of these contracts before our board. Obviously, everybody can look at that proposal down the road and make their minds up. But once again, what we're trying to do is learn from the best practices and difficulties during the pandemic. And this is all supposed to be positive as far as helping avoid situations. That we have lessons learned from the pandemic.
Thank you.
Chief Deputy Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. On the unemployment fraud issue, I'll just, I'm glad that you're having discussions with our department. I just say that we've identified 1.5 million cases of fraud. We have hundreds of thousands of them that are constantly occurring on an almost weekly basis. We resolve 97% of all unemployment cases. There are about 3% that are stuck in adjudication purgatory, thanks to some really bad laws we have in Maryland we're trying to change with the legislature. One of the three states in the country that has this problem. But I'm very proud of the effort that our department has done in stopping fraud. I think it's the best in the nation. We identified the problem that actually helped California and I think 13 other states find their fraud, working with the U.S. Department of Labor. I agree with you on late contracts. Obviously, we were in the middle of a once-in-a-hundred-year pandemic with 450,000 people and nearly 50,000 people hospitalized. We lost 9,500 Marylanders, and we were in a state of emergency. We did not and could not and are not supposed to follow the normal procurement procedures because we had to do things, in some cases, that day in order to save lives. You couldn't wait 18 months or 3 years to go through the process. But I agree completely that by now, all of the agencies should be getting up to speed and getting caught up, and we shouldn't have these continual late emergency. It absolutely is a critical need. With that, we'll move on to the Secretary's agenda.
Morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Chief Deputy Treasurer. Wonderful to be with you this morning. We have 14 items on the Secretary's agenda and 16 reports of various procurements. And A14 is being withdrawn. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
John Martin, Maryland Lottery Game.
Good morning, Mr. Martin. First of all, let me say thank you for having your agency respond to questions that my office had presented through Joanna to your staff about this item. My specific question is this. I understand the emergency that was declared to add the services to this contract because of the waiting. And I absolutely have no problem with that. I understand the emergency. I understand why you wanted to do that. What I'm having difficulty understanding is that the contract actually, the term really doesn't expire till almost a year from now, June 22. So what I'm trying to understand is why it is that the agency felt there was the need to declare an emergency to actually extend the contract for 3 years. So not what you're adding in, I totally understand. It's just that specific piece. If you could help me understand that.
Sure, be happy to. Thank you for asking that. It is customary in software development that once the application is initially designed, that there is a maintenance period for the ongoing utilization of that software. And so what we found with our gaming application, which was the initial engagement with the company, was that after the initial software was built, we have an ongoing need in casino gaming, as we will in sports wagering, as these entities continue to get new employees, new vendors. So the software is used daily by our staff, and when we embark on our sports wagering application process, we anticipate an even larger number of applicants than we have with casino gaming, and even a greater need to keep the software active and viable even after the initial wave of applicants, which we anticipate beginning here at the end of the calendar year and probably extending for 18 months. So we'll be well into calendar 2023 with just the initial application process, and then following that, we will have an ongoing need by our staff to continue the background investigations and licensing as these entities become more dynamic and add employees and add vendors.
And I understand that. So can you explain to me then why it is that, and I understand the ongoing need, but my question is more focused on if you had just amended to add the services and then you had not done an emergency and found, you know, just used a what I would call a normal way to extend the contract, you had 11 months to do that. What is the downside to doing that versus doing it as an emergency?
I believe as the lottery team got together and looked at our options, it was the opportunity to do the initial software development and include with it the maintenance period for the sports wagering that really took us from now through the 2025 date, again, knowing that the initial applicant process would be at least 18 months, and then we would have a need beyond that. So that initial 18 months takes us well beyond 2022 into 2023. So you know, potentially it was the difference between doing it now as well as opposed to coming to you a year from now.
Thank you.
Because this is just a blatant abuse of the emergency procurement process. And it's exactly what we've been talking about for months. And I would urge that this be remanded, that you bring back the emergency part of it, which is the 18-month or 12-month period that is that you mentioned, but that the three-year extension, which I consider to be an abuse of the emergency policy that you're using here, go back and do a standard contract modification and bring it before the board. And that would be, I defer to my colleagues, but that would allow you to do what you need to do to get the us back to normal practices as far as procurement activity. And I don't mean to be harsh. I'm just saying that's what it looks like to those of us that are outside your agency.
I guess my question would be, you know, we are in a crunch with tremendous pressure from legislature and others to get the sports gaming up and running as quickly as possible. The casino revenue that we're receiving is one of our biggest sources of income. And I guess my question would be, you obviously thought about this when you did the contract that was necessary. If we were to somehow delay it because of these concerns, how would that potentially impact the time frames for the collection of that revenue that we need?
Well, clearly, as you pointed out, there's really two facets of this. There's the initial wave of getting these applicants vetted, background investigations done, and licensed in the near term, which again, the near term will take us clearly into the first part of 2023. And then following that, it's the ongoing software maintenance and support that we're really talking about. And that you know, carries on as we've initially put together the contract through June 30th of 2025. So there really are two elements of it. You know, we are on pace to be ready when the applicants start coming in. So I'm comfortable that we will meet our target and our deadlines on the initial wave. And then it's just a future of a maintenance process, and the determination is when that process right now is scheduled to go through June 30 of 2022, and the three-year extension was part of this contract.
The difficulty here is that because it's an emergency procurement, we cannot amend it. We can only remand it back to you and have you bring forward the process that will allow you to move forward without any bad things happening. And all I'm asking is that if we are able to remand it, that you then bring back the three-year extension as a non-emergency.
I understand.
It could be sole source or proprietary or, you know, other provisions, but I would urge that my colleagues do that, because I don't think there's the emergency part we're already paying, and this is just simply a procedural fix. And
I guess my question would be how fast you could turn that around. Can you do that, and how fast could that happen? Because I don't think anyone wants to see us slow down the implementation of the new laws. And I know you're under the gun to try to get it done by the end of the year. Sure, some people are pushing for the fall, but I don't think that's going to happen. But if we drag out a longer procurement, I don't want that to screw up the process that we don't have sports betting.
I guess what I'm told is that you can do that almost immediately and bring back the first tranche of this and then bring the other back on an orderly basis. But I'll defer to my colleagues as to whether they want to remand it. I think it can be done without any bad things occurring, I'm told.
I certainly understand the ask, and I will look into that.
Well, I would move to remand it and have them bring back the initial part as an emergency procurement, and the three-year extension be brought back as a contract modification.
I support that. I agree.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
I'm going to vote no, but the motion carries 2-1.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
No.
I have a question on item 3. Oh, I'm sorry. Item 3 is this. This is an issue that was we've talked about before. It's the Carr report. If we have, do we have Secretary Leahy on the phone?
We have him in person, actually.
Oh, he's here. Where is he? He's here. Oh, I've got him sealed. Welcome. I'd like to just, maybe you could bring us up to date on the number of payments. This is an issue that, as I understand it, we contracted with companies to do permitting for us, and unbeknownst to us, they were not collecting permit fees, and therefore they came, understandably, to the state treasury and said, we want you guys to pay individual Marylanders fees. various hunting licenses, et cetera. And that's been a big cause of concern because that's basically the whole state paying for a small number of users. And the question is, this is one $50,000 payment from the Maryland Treasury to Nick Dusa, the company, for transaction fees, for CBS renewal fees under the Office of Controlled Substances Administration. How many of these payments are you anticipating, and what is the history of this contract with Nick?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. As you note, the state has had a contract with NIC for a number of years to provide, electronic government applications from the state. And over the past year and a half, we have been discussing in fairly considerable detail how this has operated in the past, because the original contract with NIC was that it would be a pass-through and that, fees would be paid by the users, as you stated. It was determined approximately a year and a half ago that there were a number of instances where agencies were paying the fees under what they collected for the license or the permit. And since then, we have moved to not allow any additional new fees to be paid in this manner. And this particular fees that you've mentioned in the PAR report was actually, I believe, 8 payments that were aggregated. And so I have asked my staff to get me a collection of all of these fees that are outstanding, but there are several agencies that have worked with NIC, and I'll be happy to report that to you as soon as
please,
I have the information.
And also to the board members, because I know people are concerned about how many similar transactions there are.
Absolutely, sir.
Get a handle on this.
My pleasure.
And frankly, the treasurer was the one who brought years ago this issue up, and I'm glad wherever the treasurer is, tell him that we're finally getting a handle on it.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions on
I have one other on items A5 through A16. Very pleased Mr. Leahy is here. These represent the 11 emergency reports I mentioned in my earlier testimony. I guess we've more or less dealt with that. But could you comment to the Secretary on the costs associated with these emergency reports? I know it's $20 million to IT support services, acquisition of 5,000 laptops. I'm not going to see $4 million, approximately $1 million for software and software licenses. And it's not my concern about the specific services. It's why are these 11? What costs are these so late, even though we've been raising this issue for months?
Well, thank you for the question. To start, I agree with you that it is important we not only meet the requirements of the law, but act diligently in reporting how the citizens' funds are used. In this particular case, I have no excuse on my part. I would only request, as you've said, that we are learning practices from this that we will implement in the future. Because of the transition of procurement from do-it-itself to the Department of General Services, as I've seen you do yourself many times, sir, when there's a job to be done and no one is there to do it, you step up and do it. And unfortunately, in this case, we didn't fulfill our responsibilities to report sooner. So that's why we've aggregated all of these together today to make certain we are up to date, and we will keep things up to date in the future.
Are there other contracts that we should be made aware of?
There are no others that I am aware of at this time, but as I said, if we become aware of anything else, we will certainly bring it to your attention immediately.
I'm going to give you a medallion for candor. Thank you, and just keep us informed.
Thank you so much.
Good morning.
I guess what I would see is an absence of some of these signs.
My name is Bob Gleason, for the record, Chief Procurement Officer. We are in a transition, and to your question, we are reviewing procurement officer determinations as they come to us. If I could digress just for a minute to the previous question to Secretary Leahy, a lot of these procurements, for example, were over a course of time, over this entire period of time. And a lot of these that are coming forward now are a result of several of the conversations that we've had previously as we're flushing through the agencies and trying to bring these to the fore. Some of the quantities of these computers were the result of the last two-year period as we had to surge at different areas to do different mission objectives. So the quantities of the computers and so forth were brought forward in procurement orders or purchase orders as a result of the journey that we've taken over the past year and a half. We've looked at the pricing, we looked at the quantities, the determinations were made based on the availability of the computers and other items and services that were or were not available based on the market conditions that existed at the time. As often happens with these determinations that we've reviewed, every other municipality, state, it was a dogfight with our colleagues, our friends in the other jurisdictions, and sometimes where we could find something, we had to get it at the moment, and we only had minutes, hours, or if we waited a day, it would be gone, and we'd have to find another source. So we have been reviewing these, and it's diligently, and frankly, we're winding down on these emergencies, and I'm hoping that this is going to be the last of these, but we are still beating the bushes. We're also incorporating, to your question, in our training. We have a lengthy, and by the way, thank you very much for participating with that. We actually have one of your employees in our next class, which starts in another week. So we have another class of 30, and by the end of this year, we should have all 250 or so procurement officers trained. So we are addressing it. We are just not quite there yet.
Just have a little sign that says, do not skirt the state's procurement laws. We're on the bus with that. Thank you. Keep us informed about it.
Yes, Mr. Comptroller, and as a small token of the efforts that we're doing, I happen to have a lanyard that I would be pleased to provide to you. This is our Emma. This is back to the technology tool. And we've incorporated procurement officer determinations and reporting of emergencies into the tool. It's a work in progress again, but I would be glad to share this with you.
Please. Thank you.
It's an effort.
A change. Right. Change is not easy.
I feel like we're winning a gold medal.
Well, I think the state will win a medal if we can get the transition accomplished. And again, it's a journey that we are in progress, and I can assure you that we are, I'm not sure that I would say that we're a juggernaut, as you said, but we are definitely focused on making these changes that will address the concerns of the board.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for, I think we allocated $1.2 billion additional to our schools throughout the pandemic to try to make some improvements to handle the COVID crisis. I want to thank you for all of your efforts.
Yes, sir. This is a team effort. Thank you.
There's a motion.
Second.
3-0 on the Secretary's agenda. We're going to move on to the DNR, real property agenda. Good morning,
Governor. Good morning, Chief Justice. Chief Deputy Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. We have five items for your consideration, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you. Any questions on University System? Is there a motion?
Second.
3-0 on the University System. We're on
roll. Thank you.
We're going to now move on to the Department of Transportation. And Secretary Slater, I know, I understand that you're going to give us an update this morning. The floor is yours.
Absolutely. Thank you, Governor. First, good morning, Governor Hogan, Acting Treasurer Rennick, and Controller Franchot. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. I think many of us can see that Marylanders are returning to our transportation system very quickly. The traffic volumes on the American Legion Bridge in the Capital Region for the first week of July actually exceeded pre-pandemic volumes. And that's also true across our system. We were up on that day about 0.4% compared to 2019. Overall, we're just down about 5% across the state in traffic. The rest of the system is really seeing similar trends. Our BWI passenger traffic is still down about 25%, but that was at 95% down in the peak. Over at the Port of Baltimore, we're just down about 4%. Container volumes are continuing to rebound. We've had new markets come in, a lot of used car markets coming in now, those types of things on exports. At MDTA, we're just down about 6% now, where we were down 60% at the overall peak. Our traffic volumes at the Bay Bridge are actually around 10% over what we're seeing pre-pandemic. So we're starting to see some of those numbers really start to return. Over at MBA, we're actually seeing more customers today at MBA than we were pre-pandemic. We're seeing about 30,000 customers a day in transactions a day. About 12,000 of those are in-person, the rest are online. Our online presence is really, really growing. Over at MTA, we're down overall about 60%, but that varies. The core bus system in Baltimore really has been around 50%, while the other systems, Mark Rail, those types of things, are down 95%. But we're starting to see a lot of those trends returning, which is good in terms of our system getting out there, so we have to be ready for that. I just wanted to give the board an update on that and thank them for their continued support as we work towards this goal.
Thank you very much. Thank you, your team, for all the hard work.
With all that being said, Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 14 items for your consideration today. Maybe you're here to answer any questions.
Any questions, Secretary Slater?
No.
She said no approval.
No, I just wanted to.
Oh, you have a question?
I just want to compliment the governor because I don't know how Slater does it.
I'm not sure how he does it either.
Somehow he weighs in to these controversial. Just hand-to-hand combat situations, and it comes out with something that makes progress. So I just want to salute you for having a terrific transportation sector.
Thank you for saying that. I think it's magic. I'm not sure, but you know, Ian Zoltine.
But Governor, let me add in, Secretary Slater was great, supplying information to us with the E3 review, and his staff has worked really closely with us, which we really appreciate.
Yeah.
Great job.
Wow, it's like a man boy situation. I'm going to see Secretary Slater screw something up. So
maybe we can send him to the Congress and let his back to the heads down there.
Yeah, that'd be great. So are there any questions on the agenda other than praising the Secretary? Anything we can talk about on? Or is there a motion to approve? Nothing on transportation. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to, I don't know how you follow that. Department of General Services, and I'm not sure if he's going to be able to raise, if you may have some concerns about your item. Good luck.
Good morning, Governor. Acting Maryland Treasurer and Comptroller. For the record, I'm the Lindsay Churchill Secretary for the Maryland Department of General Services. Today we are presenting 50 items on our agenda, and we are withdrawing item 50, sub-item 1.1 at this time. I would note that our agenda features $2,750,000 in capital grants and loans, and including $425,000 for theaters and arts establishments across the state. We are also awarding contracts to 9 small businesses and 6 two folks who are proud General Services employees, so I thank you for that. We have representatives from the YMCA, DMI, and UNGAR in the gallery as well, attending your items.
Well, thank you very much. Are there questions on the DGS?
Yes, I have a question on 41 ID 124, which is the consulting expert services CAS contract.
Yes, Madam Treasurer, again, we have Secretary Leahy in the hour that will briefly address your questions between.
You're on the hot seat today.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Acting Treasurer and Mr. Comptroller, I really enjoy being here and seeing you all, but I didn't know that I was going to be this busy this morning. So the question you've asked about is the CATS Plus, item 41, with regard to the delivery PMO contracts. What would you like to know?
Okay, thank you. So, if I understand in reading this, it appears that we're kind of doing a mini master contract under the master contract of selecting, I think there's like 600 vendors that were on that master, and then we narrowed it down to this. What my concern is, and what I'd like to have you address is that in looking at this, I've noticed that we have 7 vendors that were selected here, and that we have, for example, we have 3 of the vendors can serve in Category 1, 2 of them can serve in Category 3, and then 3 of them can serve in Category 3. So we have limited people. And my concern is it just seems that for a statewide contract that this is not very much competition. And I'm concerned about the fact that there are a lot of IT companies out there. So I'm a little worried why, from a statewide perspective, to serve the whole state and just to be competitive, sure, that we don't have more people. I worry, and these are my concerns as you address them, is I don't know how large the companies are. However, in a particular case such as Category 2, if the first entity couldn't have enough people, it really defaults to no competition to the second person. My concern then is if that person doesn't have it, you have no one on your list, and sure, then what happens? So sure, I just really have a major concern about having a statewide contract. I'm not so much, not quite sure I would agree that I would have done a mini master off a master, mm-hmm, but I'm not,
yes,
if that's the decision you made, that's fine. I don't, sure, have a problem with that. I just really would like you to address my concerns about competitiveness, having more companies across the entire state for these types of services.
Certainly. I'm going to try to make a very complex answer simpler. Let me start with an analogy. As you said, there are many IT companies involved. There are many doctors, but I would not go to a podiatrist for a brain tumor. Okay? There are many kinds of lawyers. I wouldn't go to an administrative law regulator who writes regulations if I was in a murder trial. Same sort of circumstance exists here. Although we say these are IT companies, each of these companies has already demonstrated a specific talent, and the 3 that we focused on in this procurement were actually running programs and projects, so project management, technical writing, and then business analysis. And if you look at the history of how state contracts for IT procurements have operated. Historically, the vendors have provided the project management themselves that were doing the work. And to the comptroller's point, we're attempting to create checks and balances so there's transparency. We want someone who is independent to be able to hold the vendor and their feet to the fire. So we want to have less projects that run over budget or run over time. So to the competition question, we had a perfectly normal RFP, and the folks who do have an expertise in this that sat on the panels found these companies to be particularly well-versed and credited for doing this kind of work. To your concern, if indeed, based on the needs that we see are likely, we are not meeting these needs, we would want to expand these panels, absolutely. But based on what I have been told, both from the contracts we've had here in the past and from talking to CIOs in other states that have set up similar processes, that this would meet our needs. And so I didn't want to overexpand, but to your point, if indeed we are not meeting the competition concerns because people are defaulting or drop out, I would want to recompete and expand both of those.
Thank you for that. And then just a follow-up to that, when you went out to the master contract looking for people, were these the only 7 people who responded? Or how many people actually responded?
No. As I understand it, there were 18 respondents.
There were 18 responses that you then narrowed.
Yes, and most of them, as you said, were general IT. They did not have specific expertise in project management. And some of them are vendors we do other work with, and didn't want to create potential conflicts of interest because of the technical work that they're already doing with the state.
Okay. And then understanding that, had you made a decision not to pick from that category and potentially go out and do another master contract for these particular services, what is your feeling on the availability of, if you had done that, the number of, when I say qualified, meaning qualified, that people had these particular skill sets that would have responded? Do you believe it would have been more than the 7, or do you think there's just 7 that would have done it?
I honestly don't know, because I was not part of the review process. I would expect that if it was more broadly advertised and we did not voice our concerns about competition, there may have been more people that indeed did compete for this. But as I said, of the 18 we had, it represented a diverse group of IT skills, and we found these 7 to be the most qualified. We had not set a particular number at first. In fact, originally I said I wanted 10, and it just turned out that these 7 actually had the qualifications, and the other 9, or 11 rather, fell below that line.
Gosh, it was 18 out of about 600. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Very much. Any other questions on PGA?
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to vote against this because every time I see an item like this, it just does not feel like this is $100 million contract that's going to go on for a number of years. And just to your analogy about if I had a brain tumor, I would go look at brain surgery. Well, yeah, but I'd like to look at more than two.
Sure. Well, I certainly understand.
And if I were at a legal problem, I'd like to be not restricted to 3 lawyers. I'd like to be able to shop whatever the specifics are at the time that it occurs, because this is a 3-year contract, including 2 1-year renewal options. So that's, you know, that's quite a bit of time. And I just don't feel comfortable because it's a large sum of money, and it's in essence, as the deputy treasurer was saying, it's a task order within a task order. And so I guess the question I have is, how are you going to assure that there's robust competition?
Certainly.
So the taxpayers get the best deal?
Certainly. Well, I will start by saying I'm sorry we have not made it clear to you why we believe this will enhance the existing competition. As I said, one of the principal reasons to do this is to create the checks and balances in how current projects operate. As you know very well, because we've talked about it on occasion, there are many times that projects have cost overruns and time overruns. And it is because the project management is done within the project vendor. And so we found this as a way to minimize that likelihood of things overrunning the budget or the time. And we made a conscious decision because everything else we've tried in the 4 years I've been here to remove those concerns has not worked. As you may know, we've been working on this for almost 2 years. It came to the board before in March and was sent back because of questions, and I believe we had answered those questions. But I would request that you reconsider, because I think this is better than what we've had, and indeed, we are not able to move forward with any of our projects right now that need project management, because we don't have the vehicle. And I would be more than happy to talk about an amendment to increase competition in the future, but the breadth of our concerns about doing the work necessary to serve the citizens, this has reached a critical point for my department. And as you said, I certainly understand your concerns, but I think if you look at what has happened across the country, this aligns with best practices in terms of managing IT projects. And it also gives us the capacity to determine over time what the actual need will be. Based on the number of projects we've had in the past, creating a master contract that then takes us additional time to fulfill these needs at this point just didn't seem warranted. But I certainly defer to your concerns, and we'll do better.
What are the amendments you refer to that could be brought?
Well, if there is a concern that there is not enough competition, we would reopen this matter and recompete it for the specific tools we need. As we said, we had 18 people who applied last time, because this is a rather specialized area of operations. Project management is not a big money maker for most of these folks because it creates the oversight required. Additionally, it will reduce the need to go back and forth to the vendors from IBM, because if we have someone embedded in the project, they will be already addressing those questions. And we're already paying for project management in these projects. So yes, it is a lot of money, but if it brings us to the point where we actually hold vendors to what they contracted for in the first place, it will save us a lot of money too.
Are these coming back before the board?
I would expect they would if they were over $200,000. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Very good. Are there any other questions on BGF?